Hey, Chris Garlock here with this week's Labor History Today.
There's an inscription on the monument by one of the martyrs who was hung. It says, "The day will come when our silence will be more powerful than the voices you are throttling today."
On today's show, Saul Schneiderman takes us on a road trip to discover the markers, memorials, and monuments commemorating the history and heritage of America's workers. Saul directs the Inventory of American Labor Landmarks, a project of the Labor Heritage Foundation. And on this week's Labor History in 2, Rick Smith tells us about Joyce Miller, the first woman ever elected to the executive board of the AFL-CIO.
Miss Miller saw union membership, collective bargaining, and labor contracts as the road to equality for working women.
That's all ahead on this week's Labor History Today. Here's the show.
You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss.
One, two. On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. My love is making music with my friends, and I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Going places that I've never been, seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again.
Good evening and welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. I'm your host, Michael Savoie. You just heard Willie Nelson with On the Road Again. Our show tonight is titled Labor's Sacred Places. Joining us tonight is Saul Schneiderman, a retired union activist who has served in some of our nation's most prestigious libraries, including the Department of Interior, the Library of Congress, the Smithsonian, and the GPO, the Government Publishing Office. Saul is past president of the Library of Congress Professional Guild and currently sits on the board of directors of Mother Jones Heritage Project. Good evening, Saul. Thank you for being on the Heartland Labor Forum.
Good evening, Michael. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Indeed, it is. Yeah, Saul, if any of our listeners are on the road again, why, we certainly have got some interesting places to tell them about. But before we get to that, let me ask how you became interested in labor's historic landmarks.
Oh, I'm so glad you used the word labor landmarks. I got interested in this topic really back in the 70s through a woman who I'm sure your listeners know about as a great labor folk hero, and that would be Mary Harris Mother Jones. A lot of people know about Mother Jones. She was born in Cork, Ireland. She came to the United States. I went to Memphis and married a union iron molder named George Jones and lost him, her husband, and all four of her children in a yellow fever epidemic in 1867 in Memphis. Distraught, she had nothing. She moved to Chicago, and eventually her dressmaking business burnt down in the Chicago fire. So she wandered the streets. Homeless, and ended up in a church and a meeting of the Knights of Labor, and then the rest is history. Of course, she was hired as an organizer at the age of 60 by the United Mine Workers, and she has a very compelling story, and I was interested in her through a song called The Death of Mother Jones, which Gene Autry recorded in 1930, following her death. In fact, I'll sing the first verse of it for you. The world today is mourning the death of Mother Jones. Grief and sorrow hover over the miners' homes. This grand old champion of labor has gone to a better land. But the heart working miners, they miss her guiding hand. Well, I was doing research on that song, and it took me to a book by Archie Green called Only a Miner. Archie is a labor folklorist. And in that book, I saw a broadside that said that Mother Jones had died on December 1st, November 30th, 1930, in Silver Spring, Maryland. Well, that's my hometown, Michael. That's where I went to high school. So I decided to try to find the house that Mother Jones died in. And it's a bit of a long story, but to make it rather short, when Mother Jones came to Washington, you know, she traveled all over the United States. She had really no home. She stayed with Terence Powderly, the founder of the Knights of Labor here in Washington. And friends of the Powderlys were a woman and their husband named Lillian Burgess and Walter Burgess, who owned a farm out here in what is now Adelphi and used to be called Silver Spring. And Mother Jones would come out and stay with the Burgesses. And in fact, from 1928 to 1930, she lived with, was cared for by Lillian Burgess and died there. And I, through my research, trying to find the house she died in, actually found a relative of the Burgesses, and who told me that he parked cars at Mother Jones's 100th birthday there. And eventually, by applying for an historic marker, which I did some years later, we were able to put up an historic marker at the site of her death. And I have to tell you, I'm sad to report to your listeners that when I did this research in the early 70s, I revisited it in the year 2000 and found that out of 400 historic markers in the state of Maryland, not one of them was about labor history, about union matters, or about the workers and the working class heritage that we have in the state. And this was the first one, a labor landmark that was established here in the state of Maryland. And that's what got me onto the road of the inventory of American labor landmarks.
Well, absolutely, Saul, and I'm glad you did, man. You know, Mother Jones is perhaps one of the biggest figures in the American labor movement, and certainly we could use 1,000 just like her today. So when you say labor landmarks, Saul, tell our listeners, how do you distinguish a labor landmark?
Well, what happened is I eventually called Archie Green, who lived in San Francisco, and we, over the years, we talked and said, how many of these landmarks are in the United States? And we started collecting. And what we're talking about here are monuments and memorials. By the way, you know how many memorials there are to coal miners in the United States, especially around Worker Memorial Day, about accidents on the job and disasters, occupational illnesses, monuments, memorials, historic markers. Some people call them roadside signs, old union halls. If a union hall has historical significance, we started listing that. Public sculpture, commonly known as statues, that are in a park. And by the way, I'm working with a group of people who are trying to get a statue for Mother Jones in Chicago. Museums, labor history museums, labor history tours. I think you had a labor history tour in Kansas City. And in the beginning, we included labor murals. And we gave our collection a name, the Inventory of American Labor Landmarks. And we thought if we could list these, right, and many of them are online at laborheritage.org, sponsored by the Labor Heritage Foundation, people would go and visit them and to get an understanding of labor history through place. I said place, P-L-A-C-E, not space, not internet space, not computer space, but the actual physical place where events happened. And when you go to these, visit these sites, you can actually, with your mind's eye, experience labor history and labor heritage. We did not collect industrial sites. A lot of folks that are probably listening to your show are thinking of maybe factories or mines and mills and old factories that dot the landscape. I think you would call that industrial heritage or industrial history. We were talking about labor heritage and labor history.
Indeed. So, you know, I've been to a few of those monuments across our nation, and man, I tell you, they're sacred places. If you have any inkling of what labor has gone through to be in its rightful place in American hierarchy. And so certainly I'm glad that you've worked to put labor on that map. So tell us, Saul, how would we go about looking at some of these places? I kind of like the line out of your website that said, just dig where you stand.
Well, there's two things you need to do before you dig where you stand. You have to stop and look and listen. And I think that especially with a pandemic, people are slowing down a bit. And the dig where you stand came from actually a Swedish author. The idea is that there's a rich labor history and heritage in your city, in your town, in your state. Believe me, Maryland, in many respects, is a southern state. And as I said, at the time I did the research on Mother Jones, there was one historic marker. And now, years later, there's still only three out of approximately 400 or 500. So, yes, dig where you stand. There are some wonderful labor history societies around the United States. Michigan has a labor history society, Pennsylvania, the Pacific Northwest, Wisconsin Labor History Society. And many of these have sites where they call labor history sites where you can go visit them. But the idea of digging where you stand is kind of makes it fun because there's a discovery aspect. As I mentioned to you, I had no idea whatever. Of course, the house that Mother Jones died in is no longer standing, and it's just simply a middle-class neighborhood here in Adelphi, Maryland. But the wonderful, beautiful marker that's there that calls her Mother Jones the grand old champion of labor has attracted trade union activists from the Washington area who come to the historic marker. We've had a couple of May Day celebrations there. The nearby church has opened its doors to us, and we've had some lectures on Mother Jones and community discussions. So, yeah, there is a history, a working class history, a labor history, but it's buried beneath the surface. And so to get at it, dig where you stand.
You know, Saul, I took a look at some of the monuments there and on Mother Jones's website, rather, and of course, just 289 miles from my door is Mother Jones's monument, the labor cemetery in which she was buried. So that's right in my backyard, you know. Why don't you tell our listeners, Saul, some of the historic labor monuments across our country, and we could talk about them briefly.
Well, you mentioned the Mother Jones Monument, which is in Mount Olive, Illinois, and that's just absolutely beautiful. I've been there. And talk about holy ground. She's buried in the Union Miners Cemetery in Mount Olive. Then the story behind that is that there was a strike in Mount Olive, in Zierden, Illinois, rather, and the strikers were not allowed, the ones who were died in that epic struggle, were not allowed to be buried in a public cemetery. So some progressive miners purchased a piece of land and called it Union Miner Cemetery, and Mother Jones said she wanted to be buried there. And there's a beautiful monument. It's a 22-foot-tall granite monument. She's flanked by two coal miners. And believe it or not, when it was erected in 1936, 50,000 people attended that dedication. So it's a small town, Mount Olive, but it's really, really worth going. Here's one, the Eugene V. Debs House in Terre Haute, Indiana. Eugene V. Debs, a founding member of the IWW and the American Railway Union, and probably the best-known socialist in the United States. He ran for president 5 times under the Socialist Party. And people may know that in 1918, he gave an anti-war speech in Canton, Ohio. And he was arrested for it and convicted, even though the war was over. And while he was in prison, he garnered 1 million votes. He ran for president in prison. And in his home in Terre Haute has been preserved by a wonderful organization, Michael, called the Debs Foundation. It's a free museum. And you can go there, and for a $5 donation, you can take a tour of the home that Gene Debs lived in. That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I actually put it on my list there, Saul, of places to visit. Go ahead.
Well, two other places you know that are really sacred. One of course is the Haymarket Martyrs Monument in Chicago. This is a labor landmark that is known throughout the world. In fact, foreign visitors from all over the world who come to Chicago want to visit the site where the Haymarket Martyrs were hung in the infamous Haymarket affair, fighting for the 8-hour day in 1886. There's a beautiful monument there in what used to be called Waldheim Cemetery, now it's Forest Home Cemetery. And there's an inscription on the monument by one of the martyrs who was hung. It says, "The day will come when our silence will be more powerful than the voices you are throttling today." And in that same cemetery are a number of labor activists and radicals. Elizabeth Gurley Flynn is buried in near the Haymarket Martyrs Monument. Lucy Parsons and Emma Goldman are buried there. And there's always an event taking place on May 1st in Chicago at that famous labor monument. And then really the one that I have been to and love the most, even though it's such a sad tragedy, some say the most violent episode in American labor history, mm-hmm. is, of course, the one in Ludlow, Colorado, the mm-hmm. Ludlow Massacre Monument. The bitter class war between the Rockefeller mining interests and the United Mine Workers trying to establish themselves in the coal fields resulted in a pitched battle, including the murdering of two women and 11 children who were died when the state militia lit the tent colony in Ludlow on fire. And following that, the United Mine Workers erected, again, this is a National Historic Landmark, a beautiful monument to the miners who died there. And it's really well worth a visit. Well worth a visit.
Indeed. I've not been to that one, but I've certainly been to Chicago and certainly have experienced the Haymarket. Now tell me, Saul, are there any landmarks or dedications to people of color in the movement? Certainly we've had history there.
Well, you know, the National Park Service, which is really the guardians of American history in many ways because they manage the National Historic Landmark Program and the National Register of Historic Places, have even admitted that people who are not represented, African Americans, Latino Americans, women, and by the way, they include in that labor and workers. These populations have been marginalized often in our society. And so in order to identify these sites, they have conducted various theme studies, right, trying to urge people to preserve the history of women, of African Americans. And so, yes, there's been a movement in the last 15, and I'm sure this will continue, especially considering the killing of George Floyd. Yes, there's a number of places for people of color. There are two beautiful statues, speaking of a labor leader, A. Philip Randolph. One is in Union Station here in Washington, D.C. Of course, he helped to organize the Pullman porters into the first black union and the first union to sign a contract with the Pullman Company. There's a beautiful bust of him here at Union Station in D.C., and also in Boston, again, appropriately at a railroad station, there's a wonderful statue of him that was put up by the A. Philip Randolph Society, which some of your union audiences might know as a group of African-American trade unionists who are devoted to his memory. In regards to women, there is a wonderful preserved home to Kate Mullaney, who was an Irish immigrant living in Troy, New York, who organized a strike there during the 1850s. These were laundry workers. Troy, New York was a place where collars, people used to have detachable collars, and they were always needed to be starched and cleaned, and there was a big industry there in upstate New York. She organized a group of Irish immigrant women, and I must say it was Hillary Clinton, when she was a senator of New York, who saw that this house be preserved. It's called the Kate Mullaney House, and it's in Troy, New York. That's another place. And then, of course, and I hope to go out and visit this one day, Barack Obama honored Cesar Chavez, the great labor leader and folk hero to Latino people in California and throughout the United States, founder of the United Farm Workers with Dolores Huerta. His gravesite is now in that what's referred to as a national monument in Keene, California, which is really where Union headquarters was. And you can go there and visit his gravesite and go to a small museum and gift shop there. So, yes, there is a movement afoot to preserve marginalized populations. And by the way, I would include the labor movement in that.
Indeed.
Because we're so marginalized in this country.
Absolutely. Listen, Saul, we're down to our last minute. But before we get off the air, I took a look at the Mother Jones Heritage Project, of which I believe you're a part of. And I was able to make a small contribution to what I understand is a serious effort being made to construct a statue to Mother Jones. Could you tell our listeners a little about that before we sign off and maybe even give the website?
Oh, I'd be happy to. Well, Mother Jones, as they say, said that her address was like her shoes. She carried it with her. But if there was a place, even though she died here in Maryland, but if there was a place she called home, it was Chicago. And so there is a movement by the Mother Jones Heritage Project, of which I'm a board member, and we are trying to raise $200,000 to have a major monument, a major statue of Mother Jones erected down by the Chicago River in downtown Chicago. Mm-hmm. And we have some funding from the Irish government, and we have two wonderful artists, sculptors, who are lined up, and we're just needing to raise funds. And for your listeners who wish to contribute, it's very easy to remember the website. It's motherjonesmuseum.org.
Okie doke. So we're going to have to cut it off there, buddy, but I tell you what, I think it's certainly a great opportunity to discuss these things, as labor has been fairly well overlooked in the annals of our history, but then we didn't write the history books, did we? So thank you for being on the Heartland Labor Forum tonight, Saul, and wish the best to you, and looking forward maybe to seeing you at one of America's sacred labor places.
Solidarity forever.
Right on, brother.
There is no disgrace in standing side by side with working people, sweating.
Listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, a show by and about workers, our workplaces, and our labor movement. We are radio that talks back to the boss, and you can talk back too. Send us your workplace stories, news, and ideas for shows to heartlandlaborforumkkfi@gmail.com. Our website, where we archive shows and post our upcoming schedule, is heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening to the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 o'clock or to our Friday morning rebroadcast at 5 o'clock right here at 90.1 FM KKFI.
Eric Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1980. That was the day that Joyce Miller became the first woman ever elected to the executive board of the AFL-CIO. In her 2012 obituary, the New York Times described Joyce's commitment to women's rights in the labor movement, writing, "Miss Miller saw union membership, collective bargaining, and labor contracts as the road to equality for working women, and she believed that women should be a part of union management to make sure that attention was paid to issues like equal opportunity, equal pay, parental leave, child care, health insurance, and discrimination in the workplace." Joyce grew up in Chicago, where she earned her master's degree in education from the University of Chicago. She first entered the labor movement as a worker at a gumball factory while attending college. After graduation, she became the education director for the Amalgamated Clothing Workers Union in Pittsburgh. She remained dedicated to union education for rank and file members. Joyce was a founding member of the Coalition of Labor Union Women, or CLU. She served as CLU's East Coast vice president, eventually being elected CLU's president in 1977, a position she would hold for 15 years. Under her leadership, CLU worked as a powerful voice for women's reproductive rights, improving child care, and increasing the number of women in union leadership positions. In 1993, President Bill Clinton named Joyce Miller the executive director of the Glass Ceiling Commission. The purpose of the commission was to gather testimony about women's experience in the workplace and to draft a report of their findings. Of her career, Joyce said, "I came to the labor movement with stars in my eyes. I saw it as a vehicle for social change, and I never changed my mind." Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
That's it for this week's edition of Labor History Today. You can subscribe to LHT on your favorite podcast app. And even better, if you like what you hear, please like it on your podcast app and pass it along. You can be part of Labor History Today by reading a labor history item. Just shoot us a note, laborhistorytoday@gmail.com. The Saul Schneiderman interview aired on the Heartland Labor Forum, which airs Thursdays at 6 p.m. and Fridays at 5 a.m. Central Time on KKFI 90.1 FM on Kansas City Community Radio. You can find out more at laborradionetwork.org, where there are links to 60 labor radio and podcast shows. Labor History Today is produced by the Metro Washington Council's Union City Radio and the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor at Georgetown University. The Labor History Today team includes Ben Blake, Chloe Daniel, Patrick Dixon, Leon Fink, Sherry Lincoln, Joe McCartan, Evan Papp, Jessica Pozak, and Alan Weirdak. For Labor History Today, this has been Chris Garlock. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and healthy, but do keep making history. And see you next time.